Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Tipsy Archives. Thank you so much for joining me. My name is Rachel Leagy. Today's interview I did with my good friend Aaron Redekop, where we talked about something that's very near and dear to both our hearts, which is royal scandals. In this particular story, the British monarchy faced a constitutional crisis in the 1930s, when the Prince of Wales decided to give up the throne for an American woman. Now, this is one of the first podcasts that Aaron and I recorded together, and because of our interest in this topic, it ended up becoming a two-part episode. So hopefully you'll be as interested in it as we were and join us for both the first and second part. And after you hear the whole thing, you can decide for yourself whether or not you think this is a great love story for the ages or a tragic story about two people trapped in a situation that they just couldn't get out of.
Okay, so I'm here with my good friend, Aaron Redekop.
Hello.
And we're going to talk about one of the biggest scandals of the early 20th century today, and something that has interested me for a number of years. So, to begin, on January 20th, 1936, Edward VIII was crowned King of the United Kingdom, the British Empire, and Emperor of India. His rule lasted less than a year, and he abdicated the throne the following December. And this was a huge shock because he's basically the only monarch to ever willingly abdicate the throne and not be deposed, you know, or die of natural causes or something like that.
Yeah, well, and you don't really expect people to abdicate the throne anymore.
And his reason was for a woman, Wallis Simpson, a divorced American socialite.
And that's just kind of ironic in its own right, given that it's like the Church of England. The Church of England is created so that Henry can get divorced, and now he's having to abdicate.
Correction, though.
Yeah.
Henry VIII was never divorced.
Oh, right.
He annulled all of his marriages or executed his wives.
Ah, that's true. I guess they were.
So that's what he was working towards, was getting out of his marriages, but technically he never was divorced.
So it's all these, like, technicalities.
Yeah.
And that's so much better than an actual divorce.
Yeah. Yeah. So he just denied having ever been married to Catherine.
What a jerk.
Yeah. But anyway, back to Edward. So Edward and Wallis Simpson, this is such a, as we found out as we were researching, this is such a strange and twisted story to research because, I mean, obviously there's the facts. There's, you know, we know he was crowned. We know he abdicated. They got married. We know places they lived and moved to, but there's so much surrounding them that is conjecture and gossip, and, I mean, like, the tabloids were constantly writing about them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so much happened behind closed doors, too, and so there's just no way to know exactly what was going on.
Yeah, and as I researched more and more, I would find completely different opinions on, you know, their reasons for doing things, how they felt about each other, or, you know, their pasts. So, you know, we'll try to keep to some historical facts as much as we can, but there's certainly, like, a lot of this is gossip. And the thing is that the British people ended up really hating Wallis, so there was a lot of shit said about her.
Well, and I think part of that is just that she's American, too. Like, the British did not like Americans at that time.
Well, that, and they initially really loved Edward.
Yes.
Like, he was this handsome playboy, and he was young and independent, and I thought, you know, they thought, oh, we have this new shiny monarch who's maybe going to do things differently.
Yeah.
And then she kind of ruined it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and he was really charismatic, too. Like, to the public. I'm not sure what he was like outside of the public. And his father was sort of this, like, cranky, old, crotchety king. And
yeah, George V.
Yeah.
Who didn't like him.
Didn't really like a lot of people. But he really didn't like his son.
I mean, and he said, I don't know how many years before he died, but he always sort of wanted his second son, Bertie, to take the throne.
Yeah, because there's that quote where, I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's something like, I hope that my son, David, never takes the throne.
Or has children.
And yeah, because he just wanted, like, Bertie, and then, I guess, like, Queen Elizabeth, when she was, like, a wee princess at that time, to also get the throne. So, I don't know, I guess he got his wish, inevitably.
Yeah, I mean, not that he would have ever known that would have happened.
Ghost George
V is happy.
He is very, very happy.
Yeah. So, I guess, you know, let's talk about where Wallace comes from.
The American.
She was born Bessie Wallace Warfield. It's quite the name. June 19th, 1896. Although, even, I think the year is up for debate, because I think she did lie about her age at different times to seem younger than she was.
Yeah, well, and she, there's also a lot around her birth that she was keeping secret, so.
Yeah, I mean, it was rumored that she was conceived out of wedlock.
Yeah.
She was born to old established American families, but her father died, I think soon after she was born.
Yeah, it's like 2 or 3 months or something like that. Yeah,
and she left, he left Bessie and her mother with very little money.
Mm-hmm.
She did have an uncle, I guess on the father's side, who did have some money and helped them out as she was growing up, helped her go to school. So she was able to get a decent education, but she grew up with very little, and, you know, I wonder if that's sort of where she got her drive and her always wanting more and wanting to be treated like royalty. And
yeah.
Because she certainly, as she got older, developed a real sense of entitlement.
I totally agree, and I think, like, even at a young age, she really shows that, because she actually, like, convinced her uncle to send her to that, it's like a finishing school, I think, that she went to.
Hmm.
And she convinced him to send her there so that she could essentially get prepped to be ready to come out in society.
Just, I want to comment on her name, because there's so many people in her life that comment on how masculine she was.
Yes.
And just even to be born with the name Wallace Warfield. Like, yeah. Or, like, after she drops the Bessie.
Yeah.
Part, because, you know, I think there's a famous quote about her not wanting to be called the same name as cows.
Yeah.
But yeah, Wallace Warfield is a very strong name.
Very strong for a woman. Name. It is. And, well, and it's when you read that name, or if you heard that name, you would have no idea if you were talking about a man or a woman.
Mm-hmm. So, in 1916, Wallace marries Earl Winfield Spencer Jr., and he's an aviator pilot and a junior officer in the U.S. military. And unfortunately, this marriage was doomed to fail. He was an alcoholic and not a very nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
He became quite violent when he was drunk. And it was very disastrous for Wallace. She tried to leave him in 1920, but was convinced by family members to work on it and stick it out. But ultimately did leave him by 1925. After that, she moved to Warrenton, and on the 10th of December 1927, she was finally granted a divorce. And I can't really imagine how difficult it must have been in that time to get a divorce.
Oh, I know, because, like, especially as a woman, and there's very little that you can do to get a divorce.
And I don't think your husband beating you is really a reason in that time to convince somebody to give you a divorce. They'll just say, oh, you know, well, be a better wife.
Yeah, you know, you probably deserved it. Everybody, like, it's just him trying to keep you in line. And it's really tragic that that was the way that marriage worked at that time. And it's also, it's tragic to think that a decision that you make when you're, like, 19 years old and you decide to marry this older man.
I cringe to think of the people I may have been married to based on the decisions I made when I was 19 or 20.
Oh, I know. Like, I would really hope that I'd be able to get a divorce if I had married my boyfriend when I was 19.
Uh-oh, hope he doesn't listen to the podcast.
You were delightful, I swear.
So after she finally gets away from husband number one, she travels to England and meets Ernest A. Simpson. Actually, you know what? I'm going to backtrack a little bit. And this is something that I didn't really get into very much with my notes, but in my last little bit of research I did today, she travels to Asia.
Yeah, she goes to Shanghai.
Yeah, for quite a while. And that's actually where there's a lot of rumors about her time there.
Mm-hmm.
Especially about promiscuity and...
And what she was learning while she was there. Yeah.
Affairs that she had. And
yeah.
So... I didn't come across a lot of that in my research until the very sort of end, but like we've been saying about this whole topic,
mm-hmm.
there are whole chunks of this story that we could do entire episodes on.
Oh yeah, we could do an entire podcast series, just a whole series on her.
So that could be a whole other chapter that at this point I know very little about, except that she went to Asia, had some fun, it seems.
I don't know what it was like in... When did she go? 1920?
In the 1920s. Late 1920s. She does then travel to England, and that's when she meets Ernest A. Simpson. Fun fact, when she met Ernest, he was actually still married.
Another scandal.
To his first wife.
Yeah.
But they were kind of basically in the ruins of their marriage.
Yes.
So, Wallace and Ernest married in 1928.
Well, and it seemed like that was a pretty good marriage in general.
Yeah, I mean, she stays pretty connected to him, you know, up until she marries Edward.
Yeah.
They're still talking and there's correspondence there, and we'll kind of get into that.
Yeah.
A little bit later. Yeah, so through, you know, while they're married, she has this friend, the Duchess of Furness.
Oh, yeah, Thelma, right?
Lady Thelma Furness.
Yeah.
And she invites them over to her place, and she is involved with Edward.
Right.
Lady Furness.
Yeah,
she is his mistress.
Yes.
So this is how they first meet, and I want to say 1929. I don't have that number in front of me, but it's... right around that time.
That sounds about right, because it's not long after Wallace and Ernest are married that she starts sort of hanging out with.
And there's an anecdote about how he teases her about something having to do with her being American, and she kind of just quips back and makes fun of him, which was not something that people would do to the Prince of Wales.
No.
So that kind of catches his attention right away, even though it's not love at first sight. But, you know, she makes an impression.
Well, I think reading that line was actually when I fell in love with Wallace. And I was just like, you are awesome.
Yeah.
In that you will actually talk back to the Prince of Wales. And you're not going to be frightened by his power. And I don't know if that's just her being American and not necessarily having the same respect for the monarchy that the British do. Or if it's just that she's this sassy...
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, it comes up a lot that she's got this sharp wit and this, you know, this sense of humor. And so Edward, let's talk a little bit about him. He is, at this time, like a total playboy.
Yes. A very immature playboy.
A very immature playboy. I think that if we were in the modern day, I mean, he would have been kind of like on the cover of Tiger Beat in the same way that William was. Like, he would have been on all the teeny bopper magazines of, he's so handsome and... stylish. And it's interesting though, because the public image of him, like, they loved him. But a lot of things come up in books, you know, that I came across, or articles where people who actually knew him really refer to him as being, like, not very bright.
Well, and I think had the internet existed at the time that he was there, or the time that he was the Prince of Wales, I don't think the public would have had the same impression of him as they do.
I just want to note that his entire name is Edward Albert Christian George Andrew Patrick David.
Wow. Windsor.
Windsor.
That's a really long... And so he decides to go by the last one?
Yeah.
And
his
the
friends
first one.
And Wallace call him David.
Right.
Casually. We'll continue to call him Edward because it'll be less confusing. So, I mean, a lot of people are watching him because he's first in line to the throne.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the most exciting things is, like, who's he going to marry?
Yeah.
So, hopefully, this, you know, young, English, Christian, sweet, you know, young woman.
From, like, a good family.
You know, aristocracy, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Possibly, but he's really just playing the field. Dating older women.
Yeah.
Married women.
He really liked married older women.
He parties a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He does. Well, didn't he? He had another mistress, too. I forget her last name, but her first name's Freda. And
she was one of the only other really important romantic relationships.
Yeah. And she's... because she's significantly older than him, too. And he's obsessed with her.
He's kind of an obsessive guy. So, Edward meets Mr. and Mrs. Simpson, and they, you know, he starts inviting them out to parties, inviting him to his house, and they're all hanging out, and for the most part, you know, they're, Mr. and Mrs. Simpson are there together.
Yeah.
And then, at some point, Thelma Furness takes a trip to America for 3 months, and she says to Wallace, you know, keep an eye on Edward. You know, I don't know what she says. Maybe he gets lonely. He needs companionship, whatever.
Can you entertain him while I'm away? But, yeah. Like, not necessarily in the entertain, but, you know, like, make sure that he's not lonely.
And this is the period of time where, you know, he really falls for her in a, in a very obsessed kind of way.
Do you think that's because she's like the new shiny thing in his life, or...
Well, I mean, she is the one person who kind of talks back to him.
Yeah.
You know, from, you know, what I have read.
Yeah.
So Wallace is a, she's a petite woman, but she's very, you know, she's somewhat masculine. Mm-hmm. She's pretty.
She's very pretty.
But, like we were talking about this earlier, maybe not the British sense of pretty, because a lot of people comment on how she's plain and...
Yeah.
She's quite thin. She's got dark hair. And very striking, kind of alert eyes.
Yes.
Which is commented on being as one of her best features. There's also actually a description by Lady Furness where she's writing or talking about her, where she talks about how Wells talks with her hands a lot and her hands are so large. Which I guess is one of the things that people find so masculine about her.
Is the size of her hands.
And that she's very angular. Like, she's not a soft, you know, curvy woman. She's very... thin and sharp and
Well, she's very flat chested and she's
so, I mean, she fits perfectly kind of into that what would have been sort of the 20s ideal in America
anyway. Yeah, and she would fit today's standards quite well.
So a lot of people thought she was somewhat plain, but she had a very magnetic personality, lots of charm and a sharp sense of humor.
That's exactly what I was reading. Actually, there was times when I would read about her and I'd be like, I just want to be friends with you because of the things that you say.
Well, and apparently she mixed a really good cocktail.
I always like a woman that can mix a good cocktail.
I just want to note that I have always really liked the term handsome woman.
It's a really great term.
And I don't know if it's like used sometimes to not be flattering.
I think sometimes it is essentially... an insult to people to be like, you look male.
Yeah.
But I actually, I prefer it to the term beautiful woman because I think that it, I don't know, it just, it's like more some power.
Adult or like put together.
Yeah.
Or something like very mature.
Yeah. There's just something about it.
Yeah.
So I like it too.
Wallace was a handsome woman with a magnetic personality. And Edward very quickly kind of, was under her spell. And like in the words of his own friends, they said she just had power over her or over him.
Yes.
He just became quite obsessed with her and just wanted to be around her all the time. She was a total perfectionist and she really enjoyed telling him what to do, who to hang out with, what to wear. She would give him social cues by kicking him under the table to say like, oh, you should pipe up. No, you should be quiet. She would suggest that he put out his cigar or go talk to this person.
Yeah.
Like, she really liked directing him around.
And I think he needed somebody to do that.
He seemed to love it.
He seemed to love it. And I think he sort of strikes me as somebody who didn't really know what they were doing in life and needed somebody to guide them.
I mean, yeah, he's drifting around. He's partying. There's all these expectations on him. One day he's going to be King of England.
Yeah.
And I don't really know how much energy he was putting into the preparation of that.
I don't think he was putting in any energy.
No, which is probably one reason why his father was not super fond.
Yeah.
Of the idea of him being king.
He was really not happy about that. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he started just buying Wallace jewels, like so much jewelry.
Yeah.
Like 50,000 pounds worth of jewelry. Well, this is the 1930s, so it's like millions of dollars worth of jewelry.
That's crazy. Like, she could just sell those and, you know, finance herself for the rest of her life.
At some point, I think her husband goes back to America for a while, and then there's really no reason for them not to just be in each other's company all the time. And, you know, the people around him are starting to become aware of this friendship.
Yeah.
They're probably not super alarmed yet. You know, it doesn't become a huge issue until he... is the king.
Yeah.
But here's that quote I was talking about when a member of Edward's council later on when he is throned, they take a piece of Wallace's handwriting and they bring it to a graphologist who is somebody who analyzes handwriting.
Right.
And they just kind of like, they get a reading off this person and I thought it seemed like a pretty apt description of her. And the person writes, "This is a woman with strong male inclination, intensive activity, vitality, She must be in charge. She must dominate, and she must have authority. She wishes to be important. In pursuit of her aims, she can be inconsiderate, but on the whole, she is not without some instinct of nobility and generosity. She is ruled by contradictory impulses. There is a certain restlessness in her. She is rarely satisfied. She is ambitious and demands to be valued.
Well, and I think that really describes what I've learned about Wallace to a T.
Like, so I wonder, too, if the person analyzing this handwriting knew who it was.
Yeah, I mean,
they kind of must have, maybe.
I do, because I feel like that's almost too much of a description.
Though, I mean, at this point, they're living in their little kind of bubble of, you know, she's dominating, he's loving it. I read in a book earlier today, like, this person who knows him says, Edward was made for domination. It's what he craved.
Yeah.
They were strangely very suited in this way, but I don't think Wallace really had any idea what was going to happen.
No, and I feel like when she started getting involved with Edward, it was more about securing her and her husband's social standing. Like, I don't think she had intentions to try to become the Queen of England or anything. I think that by associating herself with the king, she was able to run in higher social circles. She was able to get her husband higher positions, because Edward made her husband a mason.
Oh.
Yeah, he got him, like, brought into the circle. There's, like, a bit of scandal around it, too, because people felt that it wasn't honest in the way that he did it, and also the fact that then he, like, Edward winds up married to this guy's wife, like, former wife. There's a lot of scandal in there because it sort of feels like he was just trying to appease the husband of his mistress by doing it. But I think that there is quite a lot, I think a lot of what Wallace is doing at the beginning is just trying to secure this, like, higher social standing so that she's never poor again.
And in that, this is definitely one of those points that people disagree on.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of standpoints that she wanted to kind of stay in the background. She enjoyed the money, the security. But there's other people that will say she was angling to be queen the whole time.
Yeah.
And who knows? So, you know, and we're kind of getting to the whole reign and abdication part of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, when she finds out she's not going to at all be queen, because he's not going to stay king.
Yeah.
And she really kind of breaks down and loses it. Mm-hmm. Is that because that's what she wanted?
Yeah. It's entirely possible. And it also could be that, you know, she's had to, like, stick it out with this kind of, like, whiny, bratty, immature guy.
It's like, on one hand, she enjoys being in control, but on the other hand, you know, Edward is he seems like a weak individual.
Well, and he stops offering her that security that she craved so much. Mm. Because, like, when he was going to be king, his path was sort of set out for him. But as soon as he abdicates, like, he still has a lot of money, like, compared to, like, you or I.
Yes.
But compared to the amount of money and power he had when he was the Prince of Wales, it becomes minimal, and he becomes reliant on his brother and reliant on relatives, and she becomes then reliant on them. And so I feel like she's sort of stepping back into, like, the way she was when she was a child.
Wallace's relationship with the royal family.
Ooh, that's an ugly one.
You know, apparently at some point, while George V is still alive, he brings Wallace over to the palace, you know, like,
yeah,
let's go hang out in my bedroom, or
come see where I grew up.
And George is just pissed. You're not even supposed to have people that are divorced in the palace or something like that.
Yeah, they're never supposed to be presented at court. And I actually had sort of completely forgotten that court was still this thing that happened at that time. But yeah, so if you're divorced, you're not supposed to be presented at court.
So George V does pass away. He becomes sick and dies in 1936.
And Edward doesn't even want to come back when his...
Yeah, he's traveling.
He's traveling, and he thinks it's like a ruse to get him home, and he has no interest in even going back to see his dying father.
I did hear, though, that when he kind of came back and the king dies, he kind of lost it. Like, he did get very emotional. it kind of made me think of, like, how you would feel if, you know, they didn't have a good relationship. And it's almost harder, I think, when a family member dies and you weren't on good terms, because then you never have a chance to redeem your relationship at all. They never really had the chance to get along. They were sort of always on the outs, and perhaps that's why he was so emotional. Perhaps he then realized, oh God, I'm king now.
I gotta grow up.
Yeah, like, I have to... It was probably just a lot of different things going on with him.
Yeah.
At that time. And he does not really impress the advisors, the government.
He doesn't.
They are worried.
Well, Baldwin hates him.
Yes. And his name comes up a lot. And do you remember what his position was?
He is
an advisor.
Baldwin? Yeah. He's the Prime Minister of Britain.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So no, he is not into the idea of Edward at all.
Yeah.
The Archbishop of Canterbury does not like the idea of Edward at all.
No. Well, Edward never even went to church.
No.
And so he's sort of like, why do I want this guy that doesn't even respect my religion?
He's not a faithful or attentive Christian. And as far as the Archbishop is concerned, he would rather go to nightclubs than go to church.
Well, that pretty much sounds like him. Yeah. And I was about to say that sounds like every, like, 19-year-old, and then I'm like, wait, he's, like, 40 at this time.
Yeah, he's a full-grown man.
That's where it gets really problematic, is because you, in my mind, I still have this picture of him as, like, this boyish figure, mm-hmm. because all of his actions suggest that.
I mean, he did serve in World War I.
That is true.
He was in the Navy.
Yeah.
Although he was really kept out of danger.
Well, because they were terrified that he'd get kidnapped.
Right. Again, another whole episode could be dedicated to the plots to kidnap Edward by both the German and the British.
I think that would
World War One and Two.
I think that would be a really fun podcast.
I found a quote that, you know, going back to how worried the government was about Edward. Like we said earlier, the people loved him.
Yes.
The people were a big fan.
Yeah.
But the people closer to him could definitely see that he was not prepared for this. He had very short patience. He didn't really care for diplomacy. He didn't really want to go through all the steps he had to, the paperwork, you know, all that stuff. And Lord Wigram, who was apparently the king's secretary, mm-hmm. thought he was mad.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And he said, the king is not normal and may at any day develop into a George III.
Ooh, that's not a diagnosis that you want.
Not a vote of confidence.
Well, and he's really, really, like we talked about it earlier, like he's very immature and he was sort of always looking for somebody to guide him. And I think his relationships with both of his parents are so broken. Like George the Fifth? Is that his father's George the Fifth?
His father's George the Fifth, yeah.
Fifth, right. Okay, so his father and him... Like, George the Fifth is very...
He's very military.
Yeah.
Like, he's a Navy man.
Yeah, and he's not this, like, fatherly figure that's going to support you or anything. And Queen Mary was in no way maternal either, and so...
See, and I didn't really get into anything about her either, so...
She's very cold. Like, yeah. I couldn't find out too much about her, but she's very much that, like, stern German... Like,
right, because she's German as well.
She's German. I mean, a lot of their family is German.
Yeah. I mean, and this was another concern for his cabinet and his advisors was that, I mean, and we are already past World War One.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find in my notes. It was the Foreign Office was not encouraging friendship with Germany.
Not at all.
But Edward was very proud of his German heritage and really advocated friendship with Germany and wanted to send English... you know, ambassadors over to mend the fence or mend the bridge. And
well, I can understand that at that time because
he was maybe just a little too excited about it.
Yeah, I think he was probably too excited about it. But I do get, like, when you look at their family history, like the Windsor's family history, they are quite German.
A lot of German bloodlines in there. Like, his great grandfather was Prince Albert.
Exactly. And Prince Albert's son was the German Kaiser during World War One.
Right.
And so it's, Like, there's just a lot of German relations there. Their last mm-hmm. name used to be German. It's only with his father that it gets mm-hmm. changed, to Windsor. Mm-hmm. And so I do get that he's got a lot of German relatives. He's got a lot of understanding there.
Also, one day we are definitely going to have to do a podcast about my boyfriend, Prince Albert, because I love him.
He's pretty awesome. But yes, we should definitely do one about them. I kind of want to do one about the Russians as well.
Which Russians?
Which Russians? The royal all Russians? Of all of them. Every the Russian person.
The Romanovs. Catherine
yeah, the Romanovs. So because one of Albert, Albert and Victoria's granddaughter, Alexandra, is the Russian Tsarina gets murdered with the rest of her family. And there are so many connections. Like, their children and grandchildren.
Studying European royalty and European history is it's like putting together a puzzle.
Oh,
like,
it's crazy.
You know, you put in a piece and you're like, oh, this is connected to this, and they're married to this Spanish family, and they're connected to this, the Habsburgs, and it's very incestuous.
Well, and it's crazy. And you're just like, why? Like, why is it so incestuous? But securing the royal bloodline is the most important thing.
But in the lifetime of Edward and George V, things have really turning at the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century, from being, things are less ruled by monarchies and democracy is becoming a much bigger issue. It was all through the 19th century.
Well, exactly. And I'm pretty sure the abdication, it never would have even really become an issue if it wasn't so politicized too, because a lot of that came from politics, not from the royal family.
Well, yeah, there was a number of people that were working to get Edward off the throne from the moment he was put on it, before he even proposed to Wallace.
Yeah,
that was just their perfect opportunity. And they were lucky in that. If had he not had this American girlfriend, who was still technically married, had one ex-husband, I don't know what they would have done to get rid of him, but they probably would have figured something out, because they didn't want him
on the throne. It's not exactly the same, but there's even, there's the talk, 5-10 years ago about how Charles should just abdicate.
He should just let William ascend.
Yeah, that nobody really wants him to be king.
I don't see that happening.
I don't see that happening.
But I think he will be older.
And I don't think he's going to be that bad of a king, but that's the other problem is
hang in there, Liz, too. I love you.
Yeah, she's the best. I love her. And you know what? Thank you, Edward, because if it was not for Edward, we would not have our lovely queen.
Well, exactly. So there's two lines of thought I have with that. Had he stayed king, there is a pretty good chance that, the Nazis would have had a lot more power and not been overthrown.
Yeah, it's always...
Because he was a sympathizer. And we don't know how far those friendships and the sympathies went and how involved they really were, because there's not a lot of factual evidence, but there's a lot of conjecture about the relationships that they had with Nazi sympathizers.
Yeah.
As far as, specifically Edward and Wallace as a couple, they definitely hung out with some, went to parties with some. They definitely went and visited Hitler.
Oh, yeah. There are pictures of them with Hitler.
Yeah, they're having a great time.
Well, there's also, a picture, it just came out last year, I think, of Edward teaching Elizabeth, when she's, 3 or 4 years old, how to do the Hail Hitler salute.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me.
I know.
But even if they had been on the throne, and Wallace couldn't have children.
No, she couldn't.
Which kind of leads into the other speculation about her, that she had some kind of sexual identity disorder.
Yeah, I don't like that theory.
There's no solid evidence for it.
Which is, I think, what makes me angry about that theory, is because I feel like that theory is just saying that she had this, strong, dominant personality, and she was, flat-chested, and so therefore she had to
And she couldn't have kids.
But a lot of women can't have kids.
No, absolutely. And I'm just saying that they're piling up the evidence and going, oh, she's obviously actually part man.
And like, it bothers me.
Without any real evidence and just a bunch of doctors saying, yeah, maybe it could be. I mean, that's not enough.
No, it's not enough. And it really bothers me as a female that if you are considered, like, powerful and assertive and ambitious, that makes you all of a sudden masculine rather than, like, you can't be feminine and do that. And it bothers me that that was the way that those theories are looking at her life.
Yeah, it's definitely one that pops up a few times over the years, and it's kind of odd.
Well, there's that whole book. Well, I mean, I've read the book because I had to read it because I decided to, but That Woman.
Oh, you read the whole book?
Well, I sort of skimmed it.
The Anne Seba.
Anne Seba. I got so angry reading it.
She does not paint them well.
No, she doesn't.
She at one point, and I don't know if this is her paraphrasing the language of the time, but she basically calls, like, Edward, like, functionally retarded.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a word that I as a person would use, but that's what was in her book.
Oh no, she's terrible towards them. And I felt like she never backed anything up with fact in that book. Like,
and that's pretty recent, that book.
Yeah, it's 2011, I think.
But, you know, I was listening to just a little interview today on NPR, and they do talk about that book a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's a little bit more sympathetic towards Wallace than people are historically.
Oh, she's super sympathetic towards Wallace.
She's not Edward.
She doesn't like Edward at all.
Mm-hmm.
She paints Edward as, like, this impotent, like, almost... She thinks he had an obsession with homosexuality, too, and that was where his obsession with, like, being hairless came from, and his thinness obsession. And so she decides that that's why he likes Wallace, because she's decided that Wallace has this, like...
She is masculine enough for him?
Yeah, and that, like, she might have genetically been born part male, part female, and...
I mean, and that's a big rumor that comes up around them, is that he's got some kind of sexual dysfunction that Wallace seems to be able to fulfill.
Yeah.
That she does something for him right that nobody else has.
And maybe that's the dominance, like,
yeah,
that's where that could come
in. Well, and yeah, they have this whole sort of dominant-submissive relationship, which, hey, if that's what's working for you, great.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, maybe if there is any truth to that rumor that, you know, he doesn't sexually really get off with anyone but her, maybe he just really needs that strong hand because that's where his sexuality is. And personally, in the day we're living in, I got no problem with that.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I have no problem with that at all.
They do a lot of other shitty things, but I have no problem with that.
Yeah, they can totally do that. If they were Nazis, I'm not as happy with them. Not into that.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely totally okay with that one.
We still have so much to talk about.
Okay. We also need more wine.
We do need more wine. We have run out. But what I was going to say is that even if they had stayed on the throne, she couldn't have children. So would that mean Elizabeth still would have taken the throne?
Yeah.
Unless he would have set up somebody else to take over for him. But, you know, she would have been the next in line anyway. I mean, well, I guess other than George VI.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it would have... Essentially, it would have been the same succession order that already happened, is, like, when he died, if George had still been alive, then it would have gone to him, and if he hadn't have been still alive, then it would have gone to Elizabeth.
So, one of the big major reasons why he couldn't stay on the throne and he couldn't make Wallace his queen was for religious reasons. And, like I said, the archbishop didn't like him because he wasn't really a very good Christian. But at the time, like, and still, the head of English monarchy is also the head of the English church.
Yes.
And they were not okay with you being married to somebody who was divorced. Or a divorced person could not marry if their spouse was still living.
Yeah.
And that was not okay. Which, interestingly enough, has been sort of amended because of Charles.
Yeah, which, and it should be.
It should be.
Because,
I mean, it's kind of ridiculous.
It is absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. And especially given, like, the age that a lot of these people marry at, too. Mm-hmm. Like, we were talking about it earlier. Like, I feel like you cannot hold a, like, a 20-year-old to mm-hmm. their decisions.
I mean, and it's, you know, completely different times.
Yeah. People don't always meet the mm-hmm. right person. And sometimes your life changes and... Yeah.
I mean, and, like, Wallace, during this whole thing where he is, Edward has become king and all these issues are coming up, mm-hmm. she's working on getting a divorce. She's still legally married to her second husband, but she has one living divorced spouse.
Yeah.
And one soon to be two.
Yeah.
So this is a huge problem.
Yeah. No,
for the government and the church and, you know, that's one of the major issues. And even if it wasn't, I feel like that's definitely the one thing they could really hold on to and say, haha, this is the problem.
Yeah.
Even though the problems were really maybe surrounded, like, in other things.
Yeah, well, and I think also, they just didn't like the fact that she was American.
Yeah, I mean, and she was, also, she had Nazi friends.
Yeah.
You know, she was very outspoken.
I always forget about her Nazi friends, but yeah.
I mean, but before, even before he becomes king, I mean, because, again, I'm not an expert on these things, but the Nazi party has been doing its thing. For a little while.
Yeah, they've been...
They're going to parties with some of these people.
Yeah.
They're, you know, visiting with them.
Well, because the Nazis at that time are not, like, the Nazis that we think of when
they start out as a smaller party.
Yeah.
And they build power.
Well, and, like, when they're that small party, they're not like, hey, let's have genocide and everything. They're, like, mm-hmm. about ideology and everything. And, like... getting German imperialism.
I mean, and, you know, before World War II, I mean, they're just thinking, like, Hitler's this upstart politician. He's popular, but it'll pass.
Exactly.
Whatever. But they're still not fond of them being friends with these people because their relationship with Germany's not great.
No, it's, like, World War One. Yeah, it was resolved, but it wasn't resolved well. Mm-hmm. And there are still a lot of tensions. There are still a lot of... to put it bluntly, like, hurt feelings, and, you know, you're still recovering from the destruction of that mm-hmm. war.
So, earlier today, I was reading a book written by a fellow who was close to Edward, and I think he had some things to do with maybe some press.
Oh, yeah.
And his name was Lord Beaverbrooks.
Oh, Lord Beaverbrooks. That's a great name.
Yeah. And so I did some reading in the book that he put out, and according to Beaverbrook, Edward wanted to stay king, and he was into the role, even as much tension as it was causing, and he wasn't fulfilling his duties well. But, like, according to this guy, he was into mm-hmm. it.
Okay.
He wanted to stay king, but he wanted to be with Wallace more. And so people knew, at this point, they're aware of Wallace. It's becoming more and more apparent. Finally, the press is picking up on it. Mm-hmm. They're starting to pick up on her divorce. They get those pictures of them out on the yacht.
Oh, the one where, like, she's holding his arm and...
Well, there's obviously some intimacy going on. Yeah. And for a while, her husband had been around. But then he's off back to America, or, you know, off doing his own thing. And suddenly it's just Wallace and Edward hanging out.
Yeah.
And he, at this point, is king.
Oh, right. These yacht pictures. I remember those.
I mean, I think there's maybe a few. They took a lot of holidays together.
They did. They really liked that. But there was the
set of
yacht photos.
They're claiming friendship this whole time. They're saying, oh, we're just good friends.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She was never his mistress, according to Edward.
But, you know, these things build. The press starts to get out of control. She's trying to file for divorce.
Well, and she's trying to file for divorce on the grounds that her husband had an affair.
Well, and they eventually apparently set up one of those, I can't remember the name of it right now, but where you set up a thing where you catch your husband cheating in a hotel in front of witnesses so that you can just have a quick divorce.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I can't think of the name now either, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah. And because, they set it up, and it is actually, it's her friend.
Because it's not easy to get a divorce in these days. You don't necessarily just go in and go, we don't want to be married anymore. There has to be a reason.
Yeah, you have, and, well, an adultery... wasn't even necessarily one that women could file for, I don't think, until very recently at that time.
And so it had to be on the man.
It had to be. No, it had to be her having an affair for the longest time. And I think just prior to that, only...
Because affairs were accepted for men.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, if Edward had just been having an affair with Wallace. Not a problem. The fact that he wanted to marry her was a huge problem.
Well, I think Baldwin actually says that to Edward not long before his abdication. He says to Edward, keep her as your mistress, that's fine, but you can't marry her.
Marry a nice, young, English, Christian girl, have some babies.
Exactly. And one, I think there's a lot of things that come into play there, and it can also be that I think everybody knew Wallace wasn't going to be able to give Edward an heir, because she's 40 at this time, I think?
She's in her 40s.
Yeah, yeah. She's in her 40s, so, yeah. And I mean, they probably don't necessarily know that she can't bear children, and she never would have, like, because she's never been able to bear children.
Yeah, so I mean, through two husbands already, she hasn't had any kids.
And now she's, you
know,
not
to say that 40s. Birth control is impossible in these times, but it seemed to be, she had confided in female family members that she was unable to have children.
Exactly. And so, and she's now in her 40s, I think they all know that if Edward is to marry her, that he's never going to produce an heir.
Looking at my notes here, interesting side note, when it started to talk about the Archbishop of Canterbury, I thought, well, what the heck? Like, well, I thought bishops were a Catholic thing.
Yeah, but the Archbishop of Canterbury is for the Church of England.
I know, and I didn't know that, and I looked it up, and I guess at some point, you know, obviously during the reign of Henry VIII, they, you know, renounced papal authority and stopped being Catholic.
Yeah.
But then I think it was during the reign of Elizabeth I that they decreed that the Church of England would have elements of Catholicism, but through the eyes of reform. So it was a reformed church, but still held on to some Catholic root stuff.
Yeah, I think
so. They still, you know, bishops, archbishops, dioceses, these things that I thought were just totally Catholic.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. Like, I am Catholic. I was brought up Catholic.
And I was brought up in a Protestant religion, Pentecostal.
Yeah, and so neither of us are really familiar with Church of England, but it's almost identical to Catholicism, except for the fact that...
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Really, the only thing is that
which
you
is
can annul...
Anglican, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And pretty much the only difference is that you can annul your marriages is really the only difference.
Well, and they don't answer to the Pope, and
yeah,
you know, there's definitely some fundamental things that are different, but like in sort of everyday action, it seems very Catholic.
It is very Catholic. I
had no idea.
It's crazy. When I was in England over Christmas one year, I went to a Christmas mass at Church of England, and there was absolutely no difference between it and the Catholic masses that I had been going to my entire life.
Interesting, because mass is not a Protestant thing.
No, it's not, and you can totally tell that I am Catholic by the fact that I just referred to it as mass.
I mean, we do communion.
Yeah.
Where we still do the wafer. I mean, I get the big... I'm getting a little off topic here. I can't help it because I love talking about religion. The big difference being that one of the things they really argued about was that Catholics feel that the bread and the wine is literally the body of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And Protestants say, well, no, it's just symbolically the body of Christ. Because, I mean, it's obviously not literally the body and blood
of Christ. Yeah, we didn't chop him up and drain his blood and then replicate it. Otherwise, we're really good at cloning and turning a body into wafers.
Yeah, or, you know, miracles or something.
Yeah, it's a miracle. Yeah.
So, you know, you learn something new about the Church of England every day when you are researching.
Church of England
royalty.
Is a very interesting thing. And there are so many podcasts we could do.
Oh, about... and will do. Funny thing about Edward during this period of time, too, he's actually pretty buddy-buddy with Churchill.
Yeah.
Churchill's, like, kind of sticking up for him in a lot of stuff. And I don't know a ton about that, but, you know, that was interesting.
Well, and I believe Churchill says at some point, and don't quote me on this because I am... totally could be misremembering it, but I think that Churchill says at some point that he didn't really need to resign or to abdicate. And
yeah, he
Churchill...
was encouraging them to kind of figure out a way for it to work.
Yeah.
And that, and I think, I don't even think he really had a big problem with him marrying Wallace.
No, I don't think Churchill actually cared at that point. I think
later on he has a problem with them.
But that's because he thinks they're Nazis.
Yes. But in that early stages, you know, he's trying to be friends with Edward. So, okay. He's king, not for very long.
Yeah.
We have all these problems coming up. He's also, he likes to talk shit about other politicians. That doesn't help.
No, that is not a good thing that you should do.
So the press starts exploding about Wallace, and she eventually runs off. She does get her divorce, mm-hmm. as we talked about. She does then run off to France to get away from the English press, and because they really need to be separate.
Well, and also, they were like, there were people that were threatening to blow her up. Like, she was getting bomb threats, and Edward also says to her, like, it is no longer safe for you to be here. You have to go.
Mm-hmm. And, but he eventually, you know, says to his cabinet and the people around him, like, I am going to marry her.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if he officially proposes in a letter or something that they've talked about, but he says, like, no, I'm going to marry this woman. Mm-hmm. And even though constitutionally the king is free to marry who he likes, as long as they're not Roman Catholic, the government just has way too big of a problem with this. The prime minister is dead set against it. The church is dead set against it. And they basically all gang up on him and say, you have the throne or you have this woman. You do not have both. And, you know, Edward chooses Wallace, which is a big deal.
That's a big deal. Like,
and I don't think that this is really what Wallace wanted.
No, I don't think that that was what she wanted either. Like, I still feel that she always had the intention to go back to Ernest.
I think she, you know, like we said, she liked the jewels. She liked being the mistress. And if she was going to stay with him, and potentially maybe the glitter of, like, being a queen was in her eyes. But then suddenly she's faced with this future where he's giving up the throne for her. He's no longer the king. People hate her.
Yeah.
You know, like, they basically leave Britain because they don't want to deal with the press and the people there that are against them. She's stuck with Edward because you can't leave a man that gave up the throne of England to be with
you. Oh, then you are, like, literally the worst person
ever. It's like, how can you make yourself more hated and a worse person?
No, she's really trapped, and I think she's really the victim of a patriarchal society at that point.
But also the victim of her own social climbing.
Yes, because she climbed, and then, like, because she needed that financial security, but it was never enough. And mm-hmm. so she always wanted more and more and more. And
as much as she held so much dominance and control in the relationship, he kind of pulled this stuff on her and forced her into this situation where she was stuck with him, but they were cast outs, you know? Like, they didn't have a lot of friends.
No, and, well,
They worked the party scene, for sure, but I almost get the sense that people hung out with them because it was like, oh, like, hot gossip. Like, do you hear he's coming to dinner, Edward and Wallace? Like,
yeah.
But do people really like them?
No, I don't think people do, and I feel like Edward holds all the cards at this point.
She has nothing more to gain.
She has, well, and everything to lose.
Unless she legitimately really loves him.
Yeah.
Which, I don't even know if she knows, to be completely honest.
I don't think she knows either. I think that, well,
she's very scared during this period of time. And we know this because all those letters that were found that she was writing to her ex.
Yeah.
While the abdication was happening, expressing to Ernest that she was scared, that she didn't want him to go through with it.
Well, and there are also letters that she wrote to her aunt before the abdication that talk about how she's tiring of having to take care of both men. Mm. And that all she really wants to do is have, like, Ernest and his security, because Ernest offered that life that was secure, and he loved her, and Edward he's so demanding and so time consuming, and I don't think she necessarily wants that for the rest of her life.
There's a quote that I found from one of her letters to Ernest that says, I feel small and licked by it all, she admitted, begging him to give her courage. She was lonely and did not understand herself, which was the cause of all the misery. Her new relationship had become a mess, an awakening emptiness.
That?
But, I mean, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean she didn't love him. It could just have been a really, the lowest point in their whole relationship.
Well, and relationships can be tiring at any point. Mm-hmm. And especially, like, I can only imagine the emotional strain that being in the public eye and being like the constant source of all of these stories and gossip plays on a person.
And you know, when we have conversations about healthy relationships with our partners, you know that you want your partner to be happy on their own.
Yeah.
And you want to, you know, to be whole and complete people on your own. But to feel like somebody is giving up something so huge for you and then your happiness is in their hands.
Yeah.
It's not a good feeling.
No, it's not a good feeling. And knowing that you are essentially responsible for their happiness from now on. Because they have now given up, like, the world for you, you know? Like,
I think at this point, Wallace would have walked away, but Edward would not.
Well, she tried to walk away at some point. She told him, because this is before, I think before her divorce with Ernest was finalized. And so he's king. She's in the process of getting a divorce. And then I think she decides she doesn't necessarily want to get the divorce. And she says to Edward that she's going to leave him to go back to Ernest. And Edward just says no. Like, you are absolutely not doing that. He tells Ernest that.
So interesting how he pulls this, like, I am weak and tell me what to do. And then, you know, when she doesn't do what he wants, he goes, no, I'm in charge.
Well, I think he, and you get this sort of from a lot of his relationships in the past, too. Like, he was always looking for somebody to provide him comfort and stability. And that's what he seemed to want out of his previous, like, his previous mistresses, as well as Wallace. And I think he is so afraid of being alone and being left that he will do anything to keep her. And if that means he becomes the dominant person in that relationship, he will do it.
So, essentially, I mean, we've talked about he does choose her. Yeah. He chooses to abdicate.
I have found it impossible to carry the heavy burden of responsibility and to discharge my duties as king, as I would wish to do without the help and support of the woman I love.
Okay, so that wraps up the first part of our podcast on Wallace and Edward. So please tune in for the second part so that we can talk about what happens after he leaves the throne, after they get married, and what the rest of their lives look like. And also what the impact was on the monarchy and Britain in general. Also, if you guys have any thoughts or you want to make any suggestions for future topics, please feel free to email us at thetipsyarchives@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.